Today's daf in Masechet Zvachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Nun Dalet, and we are holding just about at the top, a little bit below. And the last thing that we learned was the beautiful drasha as to why it is that the Mizbeach is missing the Yesod along the south side and the east side, which meant that the southeast corner did not have any Yesod at all. So we learned that it was from the Pasuk of Binyamin HaTzadik, and he was the Chayfeful of Kalayom. He wanted to absorb those missing pieces that had gone into the Chelek of Yehuda. And of course, that meant that it was not usable for the bloody predation of the Mizbeach itself. Question is that it seems that it's not even true, because we have a braita that makes it clear that there was a Yesod right there. Because here's what it says about the Olat Ta'ov. So the Olat Ta'ov, says the braita, Ketzer Haitana Seid. So how exactly was an Olat Ta'ov brought? Well, first it goes through the whole thing that our Mishnah goes up, that the Kohen goes up, and he turns towards the corner on the southeast. And that actually turns out to be the place, as we're going to see later, where Malika was done. So the Malika, we learn that from a pasuk that we do Malika, also Barosh Hashanah's Beach, and we could pray the Malika itself to the Nesinas Adam. And that brings him basically to that southeast corner. And it says, Hayam Malikat Rosha Mimul Orpa. So he did the Malika. Now there's a big difference between the Malika of an Olah Sa'ov and the Malika of a Chatas Ha'ov. And this is the first place that we've actually met up with this. We're going to be getting into the specific dinim later on in great detail. But just so we should understand what we're talking about, the Torah uses two Lashonos. When it comes to the Chatas Ha'ov, it says, V'lo Yavdil. V'lo Yavdil. So when after he does the Malika, he should do the Malika in such a way that is not mavdil, the head from the body. What that means is not literally taking off a head or not taking off a head. What defines the connection of the head to the body is actually the simani. So we have the esophagus and we have the trachea. Those are always, in terms of the simani of shechita, those are the two simanim that have to be shechted. When it comes to malika, so no, in general, the din, of the chatas is to make sure to not be molek both of the simanim. And when it comes to the oath, you have to be molek both simanim. This we'll see later on. So in this case, since we're talking about an olat ha'ov, the kohen in doing the malika would be mavdil, meaning that he cuts through both simanim. And then, mimatze damal kiram izbeach. Now this is fascinating because it says that he's supposed to press the oath and squeeze it, that's mitzui that we learned about earlier, and he's mematze the dam on the side of the Mizbeach. But the problem is, how can he be mematze the dam in the Yesod, in that area? And how can he do the Malika when he's standing over that area? Because if you hold that there was no Yesod, which is what you're claiming, there was no Yesod there at all, so then that means he's doing the Malika and the mitzui in the middle of the air. Because what he's working on and doing this Malika is not really over the Mizbeach, because he's standing, after all, not on top of the Mizbeach. So he is working, he just has that small amah, he's standing actually on the Sovev. And that means that the Dam that comes out at that point is not going to be going onto anything. It's not going to be falling on a Mizbeach. Omer of Nachman bar Yitzchak, well, we have to add something. And that is that even though it's true that the space on the ground was actually given to Yehuda in that area, but Binyamin and Yehuda made a deal between them. And that was that the Avira would belong to Binyamin, and only the karka would belong to Yehuda. So that means, so it's the use of the area that's on the ground itself that, in fact, was entirely Yehuda's. But there was an understanding that he ceded the airspace. So if he cedes the airspace, that means that anything that's done in that area over the place where there would have been in Yesod is actually in the space of Binyamin. I will say, but I said, this dam is going to be falling to the ground, and how is it going to be onto the Mizbeah? So Rashi learns that what this means is, very difficult shot, what this means is that they made like a little tiny space where they made like a piece that would protrude from the Mizbeah above the ground, so it would be like 3 tefachim over the ground, so it wasn't level to the ground. And there, the dam, any dam that would come from the Mitzvah, from the moment of Malika, would actually be falling on to the Mizbeach. This is the way that Rashi understands it. Okay, there's a lot of different approaches. We should wait until we get to the dinning of the Malika and the Mitzvah later on. So this is the way the Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak explains. All right, now let's discuss what we mean, because things are not very clear. Remember that the question of whether there is Yisod does not necessarily have to mean physically was there a Yisod. It may well have been a Yisod. We're going to make a Mizbeach that looks like a broken piece of a puzzle. I mean, like, take off the bottom Amah, long Dafka, those areas. So does it mean there was no physical Yisod? Or does it mean there was no working Yisod, no legal Yisod? Because the Yisod in that location simply wasn't in the territory of Binyamin, and because of that, it couldn't provide its function of the Torah. So Rav Amar, no, it means lo havi Yisod, that there actually was no physical Yisod at the bottom, the Binyan itself. And Levi says, no, of course there was a physical Yisod. When it says there was no Yisod, it means bedamim. The Yisod couldn't work, and the Yisod in that area wasn't really a Yisod. It just looked like a Yisod in terms of the way it was built, but it wasn't a Yisod because it couldn't have actually had any dam. So this is the reason that there's a machlokas between Rav and Levi in how it is that they understand the correct targum. What is the targum? This whole pasuk that we were talking about, in which Yaakov Avinu was giving his bracha to Binyamin, Ze'ev Yitrav, Kebaboker Yochal Ad, La'erev Yechalek Shalal. So we understand that Chazal interpreted that to mean that eating is the meaning of his absorption of the dam, and this was his prey, this was his shalal, and they were all over wherever he was, whether it was in Shiloh, or whether it was in the Beis Halamim, or whether it was in Noven Givon. At any point along his life, he is going to be drinking that blood, because all of those places were actually Bechelek Binyamin. So Rav says the correct word in the Targum is ba'achsante, in his nachala, yitbane, will be built. Now, both have those two words. Both Rav and Levi have those two words. But the question is, what's the closing word? So according to Rav, it says, ba'achsante yitbane madbecha, that the Mizbeach will be built completely in his chelek. And that means that the entire binyan of the Mizbeach is in his chelek. But Levi reads in the Targum, ba'achasante in his chelek yidbane makdesha, not madbecha. So the mikdash will be entirely in his chelek. Meaning what? The mokom mikudash, the area that is useful for bringing the dam, that will be in his chelek. But it doesn't say madbecha, because the physical madbecha, that was what he was upset about, that the physical madbecha wasn't in his chelek. And it should have been placed just a little bit further to the east, and then he wouldn't have had this problem in which that side was entirely, the one arm, I mean, of that side was taken up by Binyamin. So if it would have been by Yehudas, so if it would have been moved away from the west, wouldn't have had that problem. That's in any way, that is the I meant towards the west. I said east. I meant from the east towards the west. So there, it can't be that we would say in that same pasuk, the thing that Moshe Rabbeinu says the opposite, you know. So what it means is, according to Levi, there was no makom for dam. Okay, Toshma, let's take a look Levy fits at all by claiming that there was actually, he holds that there was a physical, there was a physical binion, but it didn't work. So let's take a look and see if that's true from the Lashon of the Mishnah, which we were talking about before. Hayesod hayam alecha p'nei kol ha-tzafon v'al p'nei kol ha-ma'arav and ochel bedorom ha-ma'achat b'nizrach ha-ma'achat. Now, Levi said the Yesod went all around the Mizbeach. And the Mishnah says the Yesod went all around only the northern side and all the western side, but it only was able to surround the southern side to one amah length, and it was only able to surround the eastern side to one amah on the length, which means that essentially there was no physical Yesod on the south, except for that one amah. There was no physical Yesod, which is the opposite of Levi. It seems to be saying exactly what Rav said. No, no, no. When it says ochel, what do you think ochel? Ochel doesn't mean it eats, meaning eats along the Mizbeach. It means it eats the dummim along the Mizbeach. So in terms of the physical Yesod, it was there, but it wasn't actually eating up along the Mizbeach aspect. It wasn't there. That's all that it means, according to Levi. Okay, so he, again, sticks to the Shita. It means bedomim, but physically it was there. Now, the truth is that he seems to be right, because if we take a look at the Mishnah, that same Mishnah, at the beginning, it started off by saying, HaMizbeach hayah shloshim v'shtayim al shloshim v'shtayim. Now, that's not true. According to Rav, it's simply not true. If you're describing a square, and you say it's a square of 32 by 32 amot, it was not a square of 32 by 32 amot, because if that side was missing, then that means that the two sides of the square were actually only 30, not 32, because they didn't go all the way to the other side. So I understand that where you're talking about the western side, yes, you had the full 32. Talking about the northern side, the full 32. But then look at the bottom and measure it, and it's only 31 if you include the Yesod, not 32. So what's going on? Well, it doesn't mean a square. It means from the longest sides. So according to Rav, the way to understand the Mishnah is that min hatzad, it doesn't mean that the Mizbeach was square literally. It means there were two. If I'm going to measure the space, you have to allow for it, since the longest sides are 32. So I say, okay, so that area, 32 by 32, is the Mizbeach. So he'll have to learn. Okay, let's take a look at the way the Gemara actually explained the Mishnah in Midas. This is talking about the fascinating contradiction between two parakim in Midas. In the third parak, where we're discussing the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. So it says over there that the Kevesh was Lamed Beis Amais, and the Mizbeach was Lamed Beis Amais. The problem is that there is a throwaway line in the fifth parak, where it's talking about how much is taken up on the ground by the Mizbeach and the Kevesh together. Well, I mean, last time I heard, 32 and 32 is 64. But that Mishnah says that the Mizbeach v'Kevesh were 62. Instead of being Shishim v'Arba, were only Shishim v'Shtayim. So the Gemara over there asks, what about the Stira? And it answers that what it means is that there were two Amas that were taken up on the bottom of the Kevesh, one by the Amah of the Yesod, and one by the Amah of the Sovev. So remember, if we would have a straight wall on the Mizbeach, so what would the Kevesh look like? It would just look like a simple wedge, right? If you view it from the side, we push the wedge up to the end of the Mizbeach. We measure the bottom of the wedge along the ground was Lamed Beis, and then we measure Lamed Beis on the Mizbeach. But that wasn't the way the Mizbeach was built. The Mizbeach, if you're looking at it from the edge, was built first with the top, which then went down until the sofe, then it jutted out one amma, went down to the yesod, and then it jutted out again another amma, and went down to the ground, right? But that means that the kevesh, in order to get up to the mizbeach, had to be cut out on its edge where it meets the mizbeach, so it meets it like a jigsaw puzzle. That means that one amma of the yesod area had to have been cut out for the kevesh to be pushed up against the mizbeach, and then another amma to fit in with the amma over the sovev had to be pushed out. So if you look at the actual contact with the ground of the wedge of the kevesh, it's only 30 ammas until it hits the yesod. And therefore, you have 30 plus 32 is 62. So that's why the Mishnah there in the fifth parak says together with 62. Because the other two amas were jigsaw puzzle amas. But if there was no yesod, why did there have to be a jigsaw of two amas missing? If there was no yesod, then there were at 31. So it should be, if you're telling me that it went, at 33, if you're telling me that it was this one went all the way, no, at 31, I'm sorry. This one went all the way up. We only have to cut off one amma for the sove. So we should take off one. So from 64, we deduct one, which gives us 63. And since it says over here 62 that we deduct two, then that means that there obviously was the yesod. So how could Rav claim that there was no yesod? Take a look at this inside now. Tashmas, who were medayik, after the Gemara explains that, nimtz, as it turns out, that poreach ama al yesod, so that the kevesh was actually in the air, wasn't touching the ground, in the ama of the yesod, and another ama over the sove, which is ridiculous, according to Rav, because there was no yesod. Yeah, so Rav will say what it means is that the area connected ama yesod, you know, ama sove, that area did not register in the length. That's all he's saying. As you put them together, that part was the part of the yesod and the mizbeach, which was missing. But still, that means put it all together, and what do you get? 62. So it still makes sense. Toshma, because Levi learned a braita that says how the mizbeach was built. So, ketzed bonim et mizbeach. Now, remember that the Mizbeach had to be built of avanim shleimot, and the Gemara later on is going to explain that shleimot means that you cannot even have a nick in any of the stones. You can't even have a place where your fingernail, you have to check the stones in the Mizbeach the way you would check a knife for shechita. If there's a place where your fingernail will get cut, that stone is bust. Where are you going to get stones that are going to be that level of perfection? So the only way you can get that level of perfection is by taking stones from the bottom of either the ocean or a stream, where over a period of thousands of years, they've actually been smoothed down to the point where they're just completely and totally beautiful, rounded stones, not a single thing sticking out. There you'll find perfectly smooth stones. You can run your thumb over it. Nothing will get caught in it. Perfect. You bring a bunch of those stones and you put them in a wooden mold. So you make a malbein of 32 amot by 32 amot. You fill it up with these beautiful stones, and then you pour in a mixture of glazing and seed and zefet, which acts as a glue, and that makes a solid piece of 32 amot by 32 amot. So let's see that inside. Mevin malbein, you make a mold, a form. And it's one amma high. And then you bring these chalukei avanim afulamot, you bring these avanim that are from under the sea, beings, although it doesn't matter how big they are, as long as they fill up this entire Malbim, then you bring Sid, Kunya, Bezefet. So you bring the glaze together with lime, together with tar. You mix them all together. You pour this over those stones, and you let it sit and dry. And that creates one solid stone, which is the Azoda Mizbeach. Now, that's 32 by 32. No questioning that, because it says that's how you built it. Then you put in the center of that another Malbim, which is only 30 by 30, leaving an empty Amma on either side. And you do the same thing. It's 5 Ammas high, because it's the main body in the Mizbeach. You do the same thing. Maybe Chalukei Avanim Mefulamot, and so on. And you let that dry. So now you've got one piece, which is 32 by 32, went in one Amma all around, and that makes it 30 by 30. Then you make a third piece, which is the top of the Mizbeach. And that piece is 28 by 28, because you cut off one Amma from each side, which, of course, is the Sovev. It's going to leave you the Amma of the Sovev. You do the same thing. This one is 3 Ammas high, which brings it up to the top of the Mizbeach, which is the Ma'araka. And you do the same thing. Maybe Chalukei Avanim, Mefulamot, etc., etc., etc. That creates the Makom HaMa'aracha, which is 3 Amotai above the Sovev. Then you have to make the 4 Kranot. So those are made with a smaller form. So you make a 1 Amma by 1 Amma by 1 Amma mold. And you do the same thing. Maybe Chalukei Avanim, Mefulamot, Bengdolot, Bengtanot. Maybe Zefet Vekunya, Mamaka Veshofer, that becomes the Karen of one Amma by one Amma, and you repeat that, you do that 4 times. So, Zeo Karen, Vechen Lekol Karen Vekaren. Now, that means that it says over here that the bottom Malbein was 32 by 32, which means that there was literally building stones of 32 by 32. So, how does Rav say that there was literally no physical yesod? We just described the building of a physical yesod of 32 by 32. So how, what he's arguing on the Mishnah, it's actually a brisa. So how do you explain that? And if you're going to tell me, well, that doesn't matter. That's the way you build it. And then you cut it down. So you cut off on the southern side and on the eastern side, you cut off. You can't cut off. The pasuk says, beferish avanim shleimot. It has to be completely smooth-edged. How can you possibly cut it through and call it Avanim Shleimot? That doesn't make sense. So then that means we're killing the Mizbeach now, if you're going to cut it. Ah, true. See, according to Rav, what we'll have to say is that you put something, you put a block of wood, which extends along the entire southern side and eastern side, you put that at the end of the Malbein, and then as the mixture is drying, you slip out that piece of wood so that it dries completely in that shape. And that way, you don't have to cut anything, and you have a completely smooth Mizbeach. So the Mochis midi mitute, the shakere, afterwards you'll take it out. So when it gets hard, it now is built like the shape of the Yesod. Anyway, look, you're going to have to say that, don't you understand? Because if you don't say that this Braita just doesn't bother telling you what you need to do in order to prevent it from being closed completely. The Karen cannot be closed completely. I got news for you. The Karen is the place where we're going to have the Yerida of the Yayin and the Yerida of the Mayim. And for some reason, Rashi mentions Dam over here, which Tosus argues about, because, I mean, obviously we never spoke about putting it into the Karen, so it's very difficult why Rashi throws that in. But anyway, there definitely needs to be an opening in the Karen that's going to be going all the way down that will allow the Mayim to come out by the Shittim. According to what you said, you just created a packed Karen. So how is that possible? So how the Amar of Kahana, that the Avanim of the Kranot, they had to have been hollow to some extent, because it says, Umal'u ka mizrak kezaviyot ha-mizbeach. that they're supposed to be filled up. What do you mean filled up? You just described a solid block. So obviously, if you're saying that the corners of the Zaviot of the Mizbeach are like a Mizrach, so then it's not possible. And you can't cut it, because after all, it says Avanim Shlemot. So what are you going to do? You're going to drill a hole through the keren? You can't do that. So therefore, obviously, Mokis Midei Mitute. You must have put something in there to allow the holes to be inside of the keren so that it was hollow. And then you take it out. So Mokis Midei Mitute Veshokale. Before it hardens, you take it out, and then it dries into the completely perfect keren shape that you want with the place inside. So Hakinami, so if you're going to, nobody's going to argue on that. So what are you asking on me for, says Rob. So over here, it's taking for granted that whatever shape has to be guaranteed, we're not bothering to tell you how to make that shape. Every idiot understands that if you begin with a mixture that still has to harden, so then you can put something in to the mold so that it hardens in that shape. Okay. Now, getting back to what we said yesterday, that Binyamin was Zocha, it'd be the Yushbezichin, because it says, Bein Ktefav Shachin. So now the question is, why do we compare it actually to the Ktefav? What sense is it between his shoulders? It's an interesting metaphor, but how does it work? Dorash Rav, well, remember that when David was running away from Shaul, he actually had spent time with Shmuel, and they were in Nayot, which was Shmuel's town, and there, I mean in Ramah, which was Shmuel's town, and there it says they were in Nayot, which doesn't make any sense, because it says in the Pasuk, Vayelech, who, meaning David Ushmuel, Vayeshvu Binayot Piramah. But Nayot is one place, and Ramah is another place. So how could they be in Nayot and in Ramah? Chima inyan Nayot Eitzel Ramah. What in the world? Ah, what it must mean is they were in Shmuel's town, which was Ramah. It's Ramah Taim Tzofim. Vooskin Binayot Shel Olam. Their minds were in Nayot. What is the most beautiful thing in the world to have your mind in? That's the Beis HaMikdash. So they were being osek in the beauty of creation. And that was the Beis HaMikdash. So they were looking to identify the exact place for the Beis HaMikdash, because David HaMelech was committed. Remember, his whole life, he was committed to getting to this time where he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. He thought that he would build the Beis HaMikdash until he was told by the Navi, that's your son, Shlomo, is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. But anyway, so all of the preparations, which included all of the limud, and to write this down as a concrete directions for building a Beis HaMikdash, he therefore needed to work it all out, and there was no Kabbalah about this issue. So they were sitting, and they were being Isaac in the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael. That's how they had a Chab. Because they said, look, if every place the Pasuk uses the metaphor of Vekamta Ve'alit, what does that mean? Whenever you're going up to the Beis HaMikdash, it's always get up and go up. So I understand, okay, that means spiritually you're always going to be going up, but it also has to mean a element of identification in physical topography, at least locally, because in Mikra Yotzim Yidei Pshuto, right? So if every time that we talk about it, it's always in terms of Aliyah. So what does that mean? This teaches us that on some level, even Poshet Pshat is the Beit HaMikdash, is Gavoa Mikol Eretz Yisrael. This second part is not based on the Pasuk at all, because we don't really access the issue of Eretz Yisrael, Gavoa Mikol Aratzot, but it's because of that, this, we learned this out bichlal from another pasuk anyway, and therefore it's just brought here, agav, urcha, and it's a little confusing because the Gemara says that I only learn actually from the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, avinei yamim ba'im, nu'um Hashem, v'lo yomru od, chay Hashem asher he'ela at B'nai Yisrael, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that's the marker of the word Aliyah, but it's going to come the time, Asher He'elav, Asher He'vi, Et Zerah Beis Yisroel Me'eretz Safono, Mikol Haratzot Asher Yidaktim Sham, and so on. So we see, we constantly refer to Yeshuva Al Admatam, that is always Aliyah. And from there comes the word making Aliyah. But it doesn't mean, obviously, that you go to the top of Mount Everest to make Aliyah. So that pasuk we brought here, Agav, but it's not what David and Shmuel were talking about. They were talking about the implications of the Pshuta Shel Mikra, which has to be applied at least in terms of the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, they said, that's got to be identifiable by the local topography, which means that if we take a look at the place where Binyamin and Yehuda border, because we know that there has to be the Yehuda, which is the Mechokaki, and that's the place of the Sanhedrin that has to be near the Mizbeach, which we learned out back in Sanhedrin, remember? And there has to be the other Chelek is going to be in Binyamin. So they therefore turned to the Sefer, which is Yoshua, that describes the border of Binyamin and Yehuda. And they said, we need to find the Lashon of Aliyah in that place. And if we could find that, that would be taking us to the height, which was the place where Yehuda and Binyamin interconnect. So let's take a look at that Gvul in Sefer Yoshua. So lo aveyade duchte echa, they brought a Sefer Yoshua, and they were medayek in the Gvul. And they said, look, all along the Gvules of Yehuda, it used the word v'yorad, and then used the word v'ola, and v'ta'ar. But where it gets to the part of the Gvul of Yehuda, which is next to Binyamin, it keeps saying v'ola ha'gvul, v'ola, v'ola, and it doesn't say even once v'yorad. So that means that the final ola must be that place. Shmamina, hokohu mekomo. The place has got to be in that intersection of the highest place on the Gvul of Yehuda and Binyamin. So topographically, they figured, okay, we'll go to Ein Etam, which is, in fact, the highest area, and that's where the watershed is. So all the water in that well in Ein Etam goes down, and therefore, that is where we should build it. Then they said, wait a minute, Amrei. They said, no, because that would not be Mekayim the Pasuk of Ben Tefaf Shachin. So therefore, what we should do is, let's go a little bit lower than that and go to the place which is Bein Ktefav Shachi. So instead of its being mamish in Ein Etam, which would bring it far away from where the Sanhedrin is supposed to be, because that's Har HaMoriah, Har Sheyotzei Hora'a LeYisrael, and if you look, put it Bein Ktefav, if we take a look at an animal that has ktefav, so we're talking about a beautiful shark. It's got very powerful arms, so to speak, and those are the shoulders of the shark that are just swelling with musculature. And then the neck comes out from between that. And the neck is vitzavarech. We always talk about Kenigdal, the vitzavarech. And that means that's the place, instead of the very top, which would be Ein Etam, let's go down 23 amos, which was the topographical difference between the water level of Ein Etam and the Mokum of the Beis HaMikdash. And that is also mutter to do, because it says Ben Ktefav Shachin. And since we know it's supposed to be at that place, as we'll see in a moment, that therefore it all adds up, that the Torah is allowing us not only to be the Vikamt of the Alita, but also to be Ben Ktefav. Because it could be that they started with that, actually. The Yibayisim, it could be they figured out, wait a minute. We know, as we learned out of Masechet Sanhedrin, that the Sanhedrin has to be Bechelka de Yehuda, and that's the Yehuda Mechokiki, and the Shechina has to be in the Chelek of Binyamin, as we just learned out. So then, we know It's a Pharisee Pussik. I mean, we can't have that. Lo Yosur Shevet Mehuda Milcho Cake Bibain Raglav. That can't be changed. And therefore, the only thing to do is to find a place where those two things can go together. If we're going to go only according to the Alita of the Gvulot, and that brings us up to the Ein Etam, so then they're going to be very far apart. So then Mitpalik Tuva, I mean, to walk from the old city all the way to Ein Etam, which is by the Yetziah of Yerushalayim, you wouldn't have the Beis HaMikdash containing both the Mizbeach and the Sanhedrin. So what do we do? Mutav, it's better, it makes more sense that we should put it in the place where the two come together, and that must be allowed because it says Beit Tefav Shechet, so it all adds up. If you look at the various hints, all of these hints add up that this would be the Mokum. Daniel, did you want to add something?
Just a question. Could the word Shechen in the verse then Tefav Shechem be a remez to the Shekhinah?
No, it's not a remez, it is. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's why you call it Shekhinah.
Okay.
Now that you've interrupted, I'll interrupt also and point out to you that Ein Etam was merumez in last week's parasha because it was Vayered Ha'ayet. Remember, the ayat can see very far, and it's a bird of prey, right? Or it eats prey. So the ayat had come down, and Avram Avinu had to shoo it away. So going to Ein Etam, which has the double meaning, not of the spring of Etam, but the eye of the ayat. So it fits in very well that that was exactly what they figured, but that was the premature closing. Anyway, okay. So then, we now know that because they were in Nayot Ramah, that is because of this, something terrible happened. Because remember that Doeg, who was David's nemesis, and what made Doeg so angry was the fact that he had spent his life trying to figure out where the Beis HaMikdash was, and that everybody should be dependent on his limud. I mean, the Marsha learns that this was the Gemara Chagiga. Marsha explains over there is Migdal Pareach Ba'avir, that the Stoic used to know, the Sholei Shmeis, the various Girsaot there, of Migdal Pareach Ba'avir. So he learns the Migdal was referring to Migdal David Zavarech, and that it was a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. And he remembered that Achitofel, he was convinced by, this was why he was backing Avshalom, he had planned to take over, he thought that he was going to be able to become Melech and build the Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, so Doeg had spent years trying to figure out exactly where the Mokum HaMikdash was. And therefore, when he saw that David had joined up with Shmuel to become the authors of the whole plan for the Beis HaMikdash, he was extremely jealous. It was the kina that was Doeg's heart was filled with kina because of this, and that's what ate me up alive. Why? Because since that happened, so then the whole disaster of Nov Ir HaKohanim, which was caused by Doeg, which David had to pay for in blood, because it was his fault that he actually didn't take into consideration that going to Achimatz was going to cause Shaul to go nuts and to destroy Nov Ir HaKohanim. So that means this is what ate me up. It was the fact that David, and that I and Shmuel and I had done this together. And you see that it's Dafka, these psukim that we brought, that I'm right, says Rava. It was the psukim that we have in Yoshua that we analyzed about the Gvul, and it was the Kanta Valita from Dvarim, because it says, Zechor Hashem le David et kol unevuto asher nishba la Hashem im avo ba'ol beti im etein shnat le'inai lafapai tenuma adem tsam mokom la Hashem. This was David HaMelech talking about how it is that what mattered to him most in his life was to be able to be Zoche, to be the one who found the Mishkanot, Mokom LaHashem, Mishkanot LaAvir Yaakov, such a beautiful tehillah. And I couldn't sleep at night dreaming about this, trying to figure out what it would possibly mean. This was apparently a tremendous challenge, and it was a challenge that Doeg failed and thought that he would be able. He didn't have that love. And then it continues on to say, Hinei, you know where we found out? Shemanu be'Efrata. We found it in Efrat. Mitzanu b'Steyar. What in the world? What is that referring to? Efrat? Steyar. That, says Rava, that's the raya that I'm right. Because what is be'Efrata? Efrata is Ephraim. And that's Yoshua. We found it in Yoshua and Sefer Yoshua, who comes from Ephraim, Tekartim Ephraim. And we found it in the Soda, which is a Yar. What is a Soda, which is a Yar? I mean, a Soda is a Soda, and a Yar is a Yar. So that must mean the animal, this is where Handy always hangs out, we're right at the edge of the forest, and these animals come out of the forest. That's referring to the wolves. And when they come out from the forest onto the Sodat. So that was a reference to Binyamin. Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf, which shows that this was actually the marker of where we were able to be Medayik, the Mokum of the Beis HaMikdash. Stunning blessing. Yeah. So those were real people. Yes, indeed. Okay. So if you're ever feeling lost in a world with semi-humans, just read a couple of these psukim from Tehillim, and you remember there were once people. There was once pillars of fire that walked down the streets.